17 through 19 of Genesis. And if you remember the last time, just a few points to recall, that God had established his covenant with Abraham, and with that covenant he was promised to be a father of many nations. Also within chapter 17, we talked about circumcision, that he was to circumcise all in his household, as well as his family, and that that was the physical sign of the special relationship that he would have with God. Ishmael, who was to be born of the handmaid Hagar, was promised to be a great nation, and the Arab peoples are descended from Ishmael. And finally, we talked about the promise to Sarah to have the son that would receive the promises, his descendants, and that was Isaac. Then in chapter 18, basically this was the chapter devoted to Sodom and Gomorrah and Abraham pleading for mercy, that if there was any righteous within Sodom, and he went all the way from 50 down to 10, asking if there was any righteous, would he spare that city? He pleads for mercy if any righteous were to be found there. And then in chapter 19 was the chapter where Sodom and Gomorrah were actually destroyed. And Lot was the only one that escaped the destruction of Sodom, him being the righteous one that Abraham had been pleading for. And the story of Lot's wife turning into a pillar of salt because she looked back and longed for the city of Sodom. So that was what we talked about in chapter 19. Now in chapter 20 that we're going to begin today, the story shifts back to Abraham, away from Lot and his descendants in the last part of chapter 18, and the story shifts to Abraham. And I've got a scripture on the screen there that we need to keep in mind and bear as we read this particular chapter. All these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. And that comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse number 11. And the reason why I bring this particular scripture to your attention is that in chapter 20, we're going to be reading a chapter that parallels a previous event, that of when Abraham went to Egypt. Chapter 20 parallels chapter 12. Remember that there was a famine in the land of Palestine. Abraham fled to Egypt, because Egypt had the Nile River, and because they had the Nile River, there wasn't a famine there. But while he was there, he told the fib that his wife was his sister, and it got him in trouble with Pharaoh. This particular chapter 20 parallels that particular journey to Egypt, and yet it's not the same. And you might wonder, well, now why would this be written, a similar incident, twice in the Bible? Well, again, going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, they're written for our admonition. There are lessons for us to learn from this story, even though it's something similar that happened before. Verse number 1, and Abraham journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and stayed in Gerar. Now here we have some geographical locations of the journey of Abraham in the southern part away from Palestine. Now this is to bring us to attention of what's going to happen in chapter 20. Now bear in mind something here that I've mentioned before. This word, this conjunction and you see it three times here in verse number 1. This conjunction and connects together events that might have a good amount of time in between them. So when we read this, we're just reading it real quickly. Abraham journeyed to the south and then dwelt in Kadesh and Shur and stayed in Gerar. It isn't like something where we would get in our car today and drive 2 or 3 hours and the journey would be over with. This is a journey that has distance separating it. And these conjunction ands is separating events that happened. So he journeyed from where he was at in Mamre to the south, the southern part of the promised land. Then some amount of time passed, and he dwelt in Kadesh and Shur. a certain amount of time passed, and then he went to Gerar. I have a map on the screen here for you. First of all, verse number 1 says that he journeyed from there. And that's referring to Mamre, which is right here in the southern part of Palestine. There's the Dead Sea right there to the right. And it's just a little bit, a couple miles or so north of Hebron. Then he went, well, let me back up for a second here. Then he went and went from Mamre to the south and dwelt between, there's Kadesh, and there's the wilderness of Shur. So he came down here and dwelt for a certain amount of time. Then he went back up to Gerar, which is up here. Gerar is south of Gaza. You've heard of Gaza. It's in the news today, the Gaza Strip. Well, he lived as a resident alien for just a little while in this area known as Gerar. We're going to notice in verse number 2 this famous individual called Abimelech. And Abimelech is a Philistine king. Now, Abimelech is most likely a title, not a name, a title like Pharaoh or Caesar. You know, in Roman times, their rulers were called Caesar, but they had their own names, like Julius Caesar, Augustus Caesar. The pharaohs in Egypt, they were rulers, kings, but they had different names. The pharaoh was a title. Caesar was a title. Abimelech was most likely a title of the king of Gerar. That brings us now to verse number 2. Now Abraham said of his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Very similar incident that happened previously to Abraham in chapter 12 in Egypt. Notice he says in verse number 2, "She is my sister." Now she was actually his half-sister. This is going to be explained in verse number 12. We'll read that here in just a short while. The last part of verse number 2 says that Abimelech took Sarah. Now, the Nelson Study Bible explains this very well. It says, "This action put Sarah in the king's harem, but not in his bed. Because of her advanced age, it is probable that Sarah was more desirable for her wealth than for her physical appearance." Remember, we've already talked about how old she was when Isaac was going to be born. She was well advanced in her age. Most likely, Abimelech, the king, was not looking at her because of her beauty, but because of her wealth. She was the wife of a wealthy man, Abraham. Now, verse number 3 through 7, these verses take the form of a trial. A trial, like in the courtroom, between God and Abimelech. And that's not showing up on the screen there, I'm sorry. Verse number 3, "But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, 'Indeed you are a dead man because of the woman you have taken, for she is a man's wife.'" Now notice that God came to Abimelech in a dream by night. Now this is the first occurrence of God giving a revelation to a man who was most likely a pagan. It wasn't somebody that he was working with in the covenant, or somebody, you know, like Noah, etc. This was a Gentile king. The last part of verse number 3, we see the quote, "She is a man's wife." Now, literally from the Hebrew, this is translated, "a noble wife of a noble man." And it's spoken of a level of dignity by God. So God is speaking very highly of Abraham in this dream that he's revealing to Abimelech. He said that she is a man's wife. And again, very, very high thought of by God. The Nelson Study Bible again. Presumably, Abimelech was a pagan king. It's not told in this story, but we can assume that. Yet God warned him of the wrong he was about to commit. This is another instance of the protective care that the Lord gives his people. Now think about that for a moment. Abraham wasn't doing exactly right here. And yet God was still taking care of him and Sarah. God's protective care of his people. Verse number 4, but Abimelech had not come near her. And he said, Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Very interesting that he's concerned about his whole nation, not just himself. Okay, verse number 5, did he not say to me, she is my sister? And she, even she herself said, he is my brother. So he's justifying his actions here. In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this. And again, this is a court scene here, and he's reporting back to in the courtroom to God in this particular manner. Notice in verse number 4, he says, will you slay a righteous nation also? And I've mentioned this before, that in those particular times, adultery was merited the death penalty in the ancient world. So the king apparently assumed that the whole nation would be punished also. He was worried about his subjects. Now Pharaoh, in chapter 12, wasn't worried about his subjects. He was only worried about himself. Verse number 6. And God said to him in a dream, yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart. For I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. And I'm sorry that that's not showing up on the screen there. I've lost my techies here this afternoon. But it's just, I think we're just missing the verse number 7 in the A there from and. Okay, continuing on. God did not allow Abimelech to touch Sarah. It's not stated exactly what happened here, but most likely it was a plague similar to what happened to Pharaoh in chapter 12. Remember, a plague came upon Pharaoh, most likely some kind of skin disease. Something happened to Pharaoh here. But no, we're going to see here in verse number 7 that God's going to say that he, Abraham, shall pray for you and you shall live. So whatever this plague was that came upon Abimelech, God's going to have Abraham pray for Abimelech and he's going to live. Verse number 7. Now therefore, restore the man's wife. Again, this is the courtroom scene. This is the end of it. And he's telling Abimelech in this dream, restore Abraham's wife back to him. For he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. Notice I have the phrase, a prophet, in bold letters there. Restore the man's wife. This was the test of Abimelech's sincerity. Remember, Abimelech had said to God, I have done this in the integrity of my heart. Now he's going to get the chance to prove it by restoring Sarah back to Abraham. Again, here's this phrase, a prophet. This is the first occurrence of the word prophet in the Old Testament. And it's used of Abraham. Now, when we think of the prophets, we think of Jeremiah, Isaiah, the minor prophets, Hosea, Joel, etc. You don't really think of Abraham being a prophet, but actually he's the first one called a prophet in the Old Testament. And because he's qualified as a prophet, God said that he would pray an intercessory prayer that would save the life of the king. And we're going to see later on in verse 17 that because of this prayer, God healed Abimelech. Verse number 8. So Abimelech rose early in the morning, called all his servants, and told all these things in their hearing. And the men were very much afraid. Now, if you could be there in their shoes, if you read this particular verse, he's telling them, look, servants, I had this dream last night. And God, the creator of all, spoke to me. And he told me that I have to restore Abraham's wife back and that I've made a mistake. And now we're all sick. We've got this plague because of this. And now I'm telling you this, and they were all afraid. You can believe that they were. Now verses 9 through 13. The conversation between Abimelech and Abraham that we're going to be reading are similar to the account with Pharaoh in chapter 12, but they're different in the outcome. There's some similarities, but there's some differences between what happened with Pharaoh and what's happening now with Abimelech. verse number 9. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us?" Now that's already different, because Pharaoh said, "What have you done to me?" He's talking about all the people here. What have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done. Then Abimelech said, verse number 10, to Abraham, "What did you have in view that you have done this thing? Why did you say that she was my sister and then I took her into my harem?" Now here's something that's different in comparing what happened with Pharaoh. In verse number 9, Pharaoh was only concerned about himself. Back in chapter 12, he said, "What have you done to me?" But Abimelech said, "What have you done to us?" Abimelech was concerned about his subjects, which tells a little bit about his character. And we'll see that as even the story develops. Also, verse number 10, Abimelech gave Abraham a chance to reply. Pharaoh did not. Remember the story in chapter 12? Pharaoh said, "Go, get out of here, take your wife and go." But Abimelech gives Abraham a chance to reply. Here's the reply in verse number 11. Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on the account of my wife." Abraham knew he needed a plan. Now think about this. He had been told by God to get out of Ur of the Chaldees, from away from his country and his people and his family, because there was so much corruption there. Then he passes through the land of Canaan. And as he's looking out on the land of Canaan, he sees their altars and the way they're worshiping, the corruption there. Then he sees Sodom and Gomorrah and all the corruption. Now he comes across another Gentile nation, and he's assuming, "I better have a plan in place." That's what Abraham was doing. Okay, verse number 12. "But indeed, she truly is my sister." Here's his explanation now. "She is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife." His half-sister. So he was stretching it, but he wasn't telling a complete fib either, because he was his half-sister. And this was his plan as he was going about, as he went to Pharaoh in Egypt and also to Abimelech now. So Sarah was his half-sister. Later on, these unions are going to be banned, marrying your half-sister, Leviticus chapter 18 and Deuteronomy chapter 27. The Nelson Study Bible adds this: "The marriages of the family of Terah, the father of Abraham, were very close. In this patrician society, the marriages of close relatives was regarded as a sign of rank." So in those ancient times, when you married somebody within the family, that put you at a high status. And that's why they tended to do that. Okay, verse number 13. "And it came to pass when God caused me..." Now this is Abraham's plan now, what he used in Egypt and now. "And it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is your kindness that you should do for me in every place. Wherever we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" Again, he's explaining, "When I left Ur of the Chaldees, and I knew I was wandering, I had this plan. I told my wife to say, 'Wherever we go, he is my brother.'" So Abraham is justifying this as his general policy wherever he went. And he already used it once before. But again, there's lessons that we can learn from this. We already talked about one, that God takes care of his people even when they make mistakes. Verse number 14. "Then Abimelech took sheep, oxen, and male, and female servants, gave them to Abraham, and he restored Sarah to his wife to him." So he did according to what God said, to restore Sarah back to him. And notice, he gave him goods, sheep, oxen, and even servants. And Abimelech said, "See, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." Then to Sarah he said, verse 16, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you and before everybody. Thus she was rebuked. So Abimelech is rewarding Abraham. Remember when he left the land of Egypt? Pharaoh had given him all kinds of bounty. You know, silver and gold and also cattle, oxen, etc. Abimelech is doing the same thing here. But it's also a little bit different. Abraham was given spoils like he received in Egypt. But in Egypt, he was expelled immediately. This time, he's invited to stay and live wherever he wants. Remember, he says in verse 15, "See, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." Whereas Pharaoh said, "Get out of here. I don't want to see your face anymore." So there was a difference here. Notice verse 16, he was given 1,000 pieces of silver when Sarah was restored to Abraham. Now, 50 pieces of silver was the usual price to give for a bride. You know, back in those days, they gave dowries. Only 50 pieces. Here, he gets 1,000 pieces. He was well rewarded for in this restoration back. Again, Abraham made a mistake, and yet he continues to receive blessings. Okay. Verse number 17. So Abraham prayed to God, as he was instructed to do, verse number 7, and God healed Abimelech. Notice, an answered prayer on the behalf of a Gentile king. Not only Abimelech, but his wife, his female servants, then they bore children. And the reason why, verse 18, for the Lord had closed up the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So apparently some time had passed while Sarah was in the harem, and God had closed up the wombs and they weren't having any children. But God restored that and healed them in the process of time. Verse number 17 shows that Abimelech had become sick upon taking Sarah into his harem. That is why he did not approach her. And the wives of the household had their wombs closed as well. Word commentary adds this, that Abraham's prayer for Abimelech restored the health of the royal household shows his effectiveness as a prophetic intercessor. Remember verse 7, he was called a prophet? And reiterates that through him, all the families of the earth find blessing. Abimelech was blessed because of this prayer. All the families of the earth would be blessed. Here we see one of those blessings. Despite Abraham's deception, and Abimelech is going to learn something here too. He's going to learn that God was with Abraham. And he's going to make that explanation later on. That's the end of chapter 20, so let's talk about some lessons in chapter 20. Lesson number one, Abraham repeated the same mistake. And we learn. Sometimes it takes multiple times before we learn our lesson, doesn't it? The old bunk, bunk on the head, you know. How come I keep making that same mistake? Here we have an example of somebody that was called a prophet in the Bible by God, making multiple mistakes. But here's another lesson we talked about already. God will protect his people despite their weaknesses and mistakes. He knows our heart. He can see that. He saw Abraham as well. One more lesson from chapter 20. God delivered Abraham and Sarah, and the promises were intact. No one can thwart the plan of God. You know, God had this plan that she was going to have this descendant, that she would bear Isaac, and that the promises would come through him. And God saw to it that that would remain that same way. Okay, I'm going to take a drink of water, and we'll go on to chapter 21. Chapter 21, Isaac displaces Ishmael. Now, what do you think that's going to cause? Animosity. We already talked about that before in previous chapters, that there had been an animosity between when Sarah had offered her handmaid Hagar to Abraham, and he went into her, and she actually did conceive a child, Ishmael. There was a lot of animosity between Sarah and Hagar. Sarah actually had her expelled, and almost to the point of killing her. That's the kind of animosity that we saw in a previous chapter. This is going to continue on now in chapter 21. Animosity between Abraham's descendants, Ishmael and Isaac. Verse number 1. And the Lord visited Sarah. A certain amount of time had taken place, that conjunction word and. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said. And the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. He had said she's going to conceive. And that came about. Verse number 2, for Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son, notice I've got it in bold letters, in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. Now notice this word visited in verse number 1. Visited is something referring to a remarkable favor or a blessing. It indicates God's special interest that he had with Sarah. And shows that God directly can intervene in the affairs of his people. The promise was fulfilled as he had said and as he had spoken. Remember in chapter 18, verse 14, he said at a certain time of the year, she's going to conceive. And she did, just as God had said. Chapter 18, verse 14. Verse number 3, and Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, who Sarah bore to him, Isaac. And Isaac means he laughs. Laughter. Remember, Sarah had laughed before. She laughed and said, how am I going to bear a child at my old age? And his name fulfilled that laughter. Verse number 4. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old. We talked about that before, that God commanded circumcision as their physical sign that they had to do to complete their part of the covenant. At 8 days of age, because that's the time when the most vitamin K is evident in the baby, a time when that can be done without any problems and without any in less pain as well. So he did it, last part of verse number 4, as God had commanded him. Remember, this was the sign of the covenant, the physical sign. Verse number 5, now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. That's amazing there. I've got that in bold letters again. 100 years old. Verse number 4, we see that Abraham had obeyed, had Isaac circumcised on the 8th day, as was told to him in chapter 17, verse number 12. And 100 years old emphasizes the miracle that took place. Not only the age of Abraham, but Sarah, because most likely she had something wrong with her where she couldn't bear children. And God performed a miracle, and she bore Isaac. Verse number 6, and Sarah said, God has made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me. Here I am, this old lady, and I've borne a child. Isn't that funny? Well, won't you laugh with me? Verse number 7, so she said also, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? For I have borne him a son in his old age. So Sarah's expressing joy over the birth of her child. But this laughter and this joy, rejoicing over her son, does not last long, because the animosity between Sarah and Hagar returns. You know, Isaac's born, Ishmael's a teenager now. We're going to see the animosity at its full. Verse number 8. So the child grew, referring to Isaac, and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. Now, why back in those ancient times did they have a great feast when a child was weaned? Well, and he was weaned at 3 years of age. The reason why was because infant mortality was very high in the ancient times. And so when a child actually reached the age of 2 or 3 years, they rejoiced and they had a feast over it because it had made it that far. And a child in these times usually was not weaned until 3 years of age. So it was a reason to celebrate, and they had a great feast. Verse number 9, let's see. Okay, verse number 9. Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, referring to Ishmael. He's like about 17 years of age now, an older teenager, whom she had born to Abraham, and Ishmael was scoffing. Baby's born. They're at this feast, 3 years of age. They're celebrating, and Ishmael is scoffing, 17 years old. Resentment between the two lads, the baby and the teenager. This word scoffing could also be translated mocking, and it's usually used with nasty overtones, like to mock, to jest, to make fun of. So Ishmael was mocking Isaac, and it was done with a nasty way of putting it. Now, remember previously that Sarah had mistreated Hagar to the point where she fled into the wilderness. Now Hagar's son, Ishmael, is mistreating Sarah's son. It's the flip side of the coin, we could say, that's happening here. And it's going to lead to something again. Here's Sarah's reaction in verse number 10. Therefore she said to Abraham, that's referring to Sarah, cast out this bondwoman and her son. Doesn't even name their names here. Doesn't want to name their names. Just bondwoman and son, get them out of here. For the son of this bondwoman shall not be the heir with my son, namely Isaac. She names Isaac, my son, but doesn't name Hagar and Ishmael. Notice the phrase cast out. Drive out the slave woman and her son, and their names aren't even mentioned. Word commentary adds this. The language here suggests a mean belittling of Hagar and Ishmael. The tone of voice and the way it was said, she was belittling them. Verse number 11, and the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. Remember previously, Abraham had said, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. He loved Ishmael. He was his oldest son, and he loved him. Abraham is hurting here. As it says here, it was very displeasing to him. He's actually going to suffer that he's going to have to cast out his son here. But God said to verse number 12, this is part of God's plan, God said to Abraham, do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac your seed shall be called. Isaac is going to receive the promised blessings, and this is all part of God's plan and purpose. But, verse 13, I will also make a nation of the son of the bondwoman, Ishmael, because he is your seed. Remember previously, God said he would be a great peoples, a great nation. Now, Abraham loved Ishmael, but God assures him that Ishmael would have a future. And God tells Abraham to listen to Sarah, listen to her voice, because her demands coincide with his plans to separate the two of them from each other. Now, there's a lesson in this for all of us. There's a lesson in this. Abraham is suffering because of this. He's hurting. Very displeasing. I'm going to have to kick my son out of the house. And he loved him. But he's going to obey. He's going to obey what God said. And the lesson for us is, you know, how many times when we're going through a trial or some kind of trouble, whether it be health problems, whether it be financial, marriage, family, whatever it might be, we think, why am I going through this? Why am I going through this particular trial? I'm trying to obey God. I'm keeping the Sabbath day, the holy days. I'm trying to do what's right. But why am I going through this? There's Abraham. He obeyed God. He left Ur of the Chaldees. He obeyed God along the way. And yet he's suffering here. And there's a purpose behind that. And we read that today in the scripture, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. We have to suffer because we're following in Christ's footsteps. He suffered, was beaten terribly, and we have to suffer as well. All his disciples, Abraham suffered. So, there's a lesson in that for each and every one of us. Verse number 14. Let's see. What happened here? Yes. So Abraham rose early in the morning, despite the fact that he didn't want to do this. He loved Ishmael. Took bread and a skin of water, putting it on her shoulder, he gave it to the boy Hagar and sent her away. And again, that was not easy for him to do. Then she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Beersheba is a large area that's in the desert. It's uninhabited. And wandered, she got lost. She got lost in the desert, in the wilderness of Beersheba. Verse number 15, and the water in the skin that Abraham had given was used up, and she placed the boy under one of the shrubs. They're out in the desert, the desert heat beating down. And she finds a little shrub, she puts him under there to have some shade. Then, verse 16, she went down across from him at a distance of about a bow shot, for she said to herself, let me not see the death of the boy. She sat opposite of him and lifted up her voice and wept. She knew that they were in the desert. They're lost. She put him under shade, a little shrub, and she got away and said, I don't want to even see him die. And she started crying. Okay. Verse number 14, Abraham had sent her away. Now this isn't as rough as the phrase cast out. He sent them away, but in a good manner. He provided them with bread and water that would last for a while anyways. And notice the wilderness of Beersheba. They're moving towards northern Arabia, the Arabian Peninsula, which we call Saudi Arabia today, where the majority of the Ishmaelites would be living up until today. The Arabians, the Arabs. That's what they were moving towards. The last part of verse number 14. She departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Got lost. Verse 15, and the water skin was used up, and she placed the boy under one of the shrubs. I don't know if you can make this out, this picture that I've got here. Here's a wilderness scene here. There's some shrubs, and there's a little bit of shade. She had put him under one of these little shrub shades here, shade of these shrubs, and was hoping that she wasn't going to watch him die. This is what was happening. But she's weeping, and God hears. Verse number 17. God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, what ails you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him with your hand, and I will make him a great nation. Now, just to point out something here before we go on here in verse number 17, where it says, angel of God, this could very well easily be translated the angel of the Lord. From the Hebrew, it's the Malak messenger. It's just the translation is angel of God instead of angel of the Lord. And we've already talked about the fact that the angel of the Lord was God. It was the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. So it was him who was talking to Hagar here. And he says, I will make of him a great nation. God heard. The name Ishmael means God heard. Going back to chapter 16, verse number 11. And he heard the weeping of Hagar and has mercy upon them. Of course, this is a message of divine authority to encourage Hagar. And he says, you know, arise, hold up your hand, and I'll make a great nation of him. And then, look what happens here in verse number 19. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Most likely this was a miracle. I already showed you the picture of the desert scene there. They're out in the wilderness lost, and poof, there's a well of water. And she filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Verse 20, so God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness. And notice, he became an archer. True to form of the Arab peoples. They weren't farmers. They were hunters. Verse 21, he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. And his mother took for him a wife from the land of Egypt. That's very interesting that his wife is from Egypt. Okay. His mother took from him a wife from the land of Egypt. His mother was Egyptian. Now his wife is Egyptian. That means more of his blood is Egyptian than it is from the descendants of Abraham and Shem. The Aid to Bible study says this. The Ishmaelites, therefore, were at their start 1/4 Semitic from the land, from Abraham's line, and 3/4 Hamitic from the line of Ham, racially speaking. Now, the reason why this is so interesting, that his wife and his mother, his bloodline is more Egyptian. What did we talk about in the last day of Unleavened Bread? That Egypt pursues after us. And one of the ways that it pursues after us is through false religion. Egypt was known for all of its gods and goddesses, all of its idols. It infected the Israelites. We talked about that on the last day of Unleavened Bread. And it infected the Israelites later on as well. Why this is so interesting is the Ishmaelites, the Arabs, would become terrible, terrible idolaters. In fact, if we fast forward from, this is probably the 1900s BC, fast forward about 1500 years to the 600s AD, when Muhammad came on the scene, one of Muhammad's goals was to get rid of all the idols of the Arabs, his descendants, and to have them worship Allah. You know, their God is Allah. To get rid of all the idols. And it's no wonder, because his wife and his mother were Egyptian, the land of idols. And the Arab people became terrible idolaters, and they would throughout the centuries. And that's what one of Muhammad's goals was to clean up their idols. Okay, continuing on, here's a map for you. It says here in verse number 21 that he, Ishmael, dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. There's Paran right there in the middle of the Sinai Peninsula, what we call Saudi Arabia today. There's his dwelling place. And this is basically where his descendants would dwell in this particular area where he moved to. Okay, now the story is going to shift, the last part of chapter 21, back to Abimelech, away from the story of Ishmael. And we're going to come back to Abimelech again. Verse number 22. And it came to pass at that time, that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. This is not amazing when we talk about the previous scriptures, that he had been healed, his family had been healed, and all of his countrymen had been healed as well. Abimelech took notice. There's something about this Abraham. I believe God is with him. Now therefore, swear to me that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring and with my posterity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, remember all the sheep and the oxen, the 1,000 shekels of silver, you will do me and to the land which you have dwelt, according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me and to the land in which you have dealt. In other words, treat me kindly as well. And Abraham said, I will swear. They're going to make a pact here. Now, Abraham and Sarah still seem to be living in Gerar, the land of the Philistines. So they apparently hadn't moved. Abimelech says, God is with you. So he wants to make a pact or a treaty with Abraham, a covenant that's sealed by an oath. That's why he asked for him to swear. Now, this word swear is a play on the name Beersheba. We'll talk about that here in a few moments. Verse 25. Then Abraham, that they're going to make this pact and this treaty between them, Abraham rebuked Abimelech because of a well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized. Now I showed you that previous picture of the desert. A water well was very, very important in that part of the world. It was very, very critical, not only for their lives, but for the livelihood of their stock, the sheep and the oxen. They had to have water. And Abimelech's servants come along and seize this Abraham. We'll see later on, Abraham had dug this well. And Abimelech's servants come along and take hold of it. And Abraham is saying, what's going on here, Abimelech? And Abimelech said in verse 26, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, nor have I heard of it till this day. And again, this is a dispute over a water well, which was very critical for the livestock, sheep and goats. And Abimelech wanted to settle this matter very quickly. He saw that God was with Abraham. I'm not going to get in trouble here with this man. And he wanted to settle it very, very quickly. Here's a picture an archaeological picture of an ancient water well with a ladder going down to it. And, of course, there was a lot of labor involved in digging a well like this, which Abraham and his servants would have had to done. And water was so scarce and so valuable, it was very, very important to have control of this water well for Abraham. Verse 27. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. So what's happening here is Abraham says, you let me have this water well that I dug, and I'm going to give you sheep and oxen, and we'll have this treaty between us, a covenant. So a treaty was made between the two, and in ancient times, an exchange of gifts was normal. The gift to Abraham was the water well in the territory of Gerar, and the gift of Abraham was to give him sheep and oxen. But Abraham was the beneficiary, the main beneficiary, thus he was the only one that gave gifts here. Okay, verse 28. And Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. Then Abimelech asked Abraham, "What is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs which you have set by themselves?" And he said, "You will take these 7 ewe lambs from my hand, that they may be my witness that I have dug this well." So the number seven had significance. You take them, and then within this treaty, this covenant, they are my witness that I dug this well. Therefore, verse 31, he called that place Beersheba, because the two of them swore an oath there. And this shows, you know, how Abraham could get along with a Gentile king in that particular day and time. Now, the Companion Bible adds this. The name Beersheba from the Hebrew means well of the oath. So when you see this name Beersheba, this later on would become a city as time would progress. It means well of the oath. The Nelson Study Bible adds this. The Hebrew number 7 is similar in sound to the Hebrew word swear. Thus, Beersheba would be the well where they swore, and the well of the 7 ewe lambs. So it was significant in its names to this, and with the 7 ewe lambs, with the pact that was made between Abraham and Abimelech. Going back to the map, here's where Beersheba is. Here's the southern part of Palestine. There's Jerusalem there, the Dead Sea. Beersheba's to the very, very southern point of the land of Palestine. And again, it means the well of the oath. Verse 32, as we wind down here now. Thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. So Abimelech rose with Phicol, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. And again, I mentioned that Beersheba would later on in history become a town. Verse 33, then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba. The tamarisk tree was known to thrive in desert conditions. And there he called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. Abraham was so joyful that he had this well for his sheep, that there hadn't been any further animosity between him and Abimelech, that all had been done in this treaty, in this accord, without violence, any more problems. And he worships God for taking care of him. And finally, verse 34, Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines many days. Verse 32, this particular covenant that was made at Beersheba secured Abraham's legal right to dwell in the land in peace, and made Abimelech recognize that the well was the property of Abraham. So Abraham had dug this well in the land of Gerar, or the land of Abimelech, but it was going to be his property. But you know what's interesting? This would be the only property that he would actually own in the land of Palestine. The promises are going to come to his descendants. This is the only thing that he would own. Verse 33, the tamarisk tree, which thrived in the desert, mark the spot of the treaty. In Zechariah chapter 3, verse number 10, to dwell under one's tree was a sign of peace and security that he would have in this Gentile land. Finally, the Lord, this phrase, the Lord, the everlasting God, is another one of the many names of God, which is El Olam from the Hebrew, or El of eternity. We've already talked about God, you know, Elohim, the plural name, El Shaddai. What else? I know there's more that I've talked about, but here's another one, El Olam, or El of eternity. The Nelson Study Bible adds this, God is the master of eternity. Not only does he live forever, but he meets the needs of his people for all eternity. Despite the fact that Abraham had made mistakes, God was taking care of him over and over again. Let's end up with some lessons from chapter 21. First of all, God is true to his word. He fulfilled his promise to Abraham and Sarah, and a son was born to them. The promises were fulfilled. Here's another lesson. We can suffer the consequences when we ignore God's instructions and laws. We were talking about that, a couple of men and I, before services, that we suffer the consequences when we make mistakes. Here's Abraham, who's promised all the promises from God. God was with him, but he suffered consequences. And those consequences were the family bitterness that resulted from Abraham and Sarah's impatience. Instead of patiently waiting for God to take care of fulfilling the promise that they would have a son through Sarah, they got impatient. She offered her handmaid. He went into her. Family bitterness. They suffered the consequences because of that. Ignoring God's instructions and laws. It's a lesson for each and every one of us. But on the flip side, if we're really trying to walk and follow in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, and God knows that, he will take care of us and watch out for us. That brings us to the end of the Bible study. Any comments or questions?